This is the Adam Gold Show.
Finally, people could bet on football yesterday. Let's go. They're off. Whew. Of course, if you're betting on friendlies, you might have a problem. So it is finally here, the Panthers' first friendly of August. They will be in Landover against the Commandos. For some reason, it has been scheduled for 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Although maybe they knew. I don't know what the weather's going to be like in suburban Washington, D.C. But our weather this weekend looks to be spectacular. Are you low 80s?
I love it.
It's a misprint. Somehow my weather app got stuck in April.
They goofed up.
I'm glad they did. Anyway, I hope it's the same weather so nobody gets heat stroke in the middle of an August afternoon for silly friendly in football. Earlier in the week, Matt Rhule revealed that both Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield would play in the game, which makes a lot of sense because Carolina needs to see those guys play a little bit to start the evaluation process ahead of the opener against the Cleveland Browns. And Rhule is already in midseason head coach treating football like the nuclear codes form. That was probably a bad analogy.
No, it was great.
It was probably bad. I apologize. I didn't mean that. So he's going with the or on the depth chart. Oh, we're not going to let them know who we're starting. It's Baker Mayfield or Sam Darnold, which, of course, changes the preparation not in a preseason game. Anyway, Baker or Sam will start. Here's Rhule on the tandem.
We won't announce that yet, but we know each guy's going to get a series. So we're going to play a lot of our starters, I don't know, 8, 10, 12, 15 plays, depending on how the series goes. So I will play each quarterback for one series and then kind of get those guys out, play the rest of the guys the rest of the game.
Did he say one series?
Yes.
I don't know. What? One series? Look, I don't care if these guys play with the twos.
Can't make this up.
Come on, Matt.
You wouldn't want to make it up, but you can't make this up.
Give each guy at least a second series. Like, if the first one doesn't go well, how do you respond the next time? Like, come on, we got to evaluate these dudes. Neither of them is the answer. We all know this. Neither of them is the answer. There will be another quarterback for the Panthers probably next year. I mean, heck, there might be another quarterback for the Panthers this year.
Yep.
Gosh, this is why you're ranked 32nd. My Lord. Anyway, offensive line depth chart. Brady Christensen at left tackle. However, he is being backed up by Ike Ekwonu, according to our friend Vashti Hurt from CarolinaBlitz.com. And I'm sure it's been reported in other places, but I just saw her talking about it. Ike Ekwonu has been working a lot with the starters. So I'm hoping that we will see more than less Ike Ekwonu at left tackle. I hope we see him there, and I hope we see Brady Christensen slide inside to guard. Right now, though, the depth chart that I was emailed by the Panthers has Christensen at left tackle, Michael Jordan at left guard, Pat Elflein or Brad Bozeman at center. Gosh, the shenanigans begin. Austin Corbett at right guard, or guard, whatever I just tried to say. Taylor Moton on the right side of tackle. All right, so that's the Panthers. Two big games played last night, and the angst in Boston is noticeable. No, it isn't. Pats home losers to the Giants. Big Blue getting revenge on so many of their exes. That's what it's about, right? Joe Judge, ex-head coach. Bill Belichick, ex-defensive coordinator for the Giants during the Bill Parcells era. But the Giants brought out the big guns. Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley both saw time. Keyshawn Johnson of ESPN's Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. On which of those guys has the most to prove?
I would probably say Daniel Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Because one thing for sure, that I do know is Saquon Barkley will have a job and probably a starting running back job, whether it's with the Giants or another team after this season. I can't say that about Daniel Jones. I know for a fact Saquon Barkley, if he stays healthy, is either going to be a Giant or a starter for another team.
Well, I'm not going to go that far because I think both guys have a lot to prove. I could be wrong about this, but Barkley has to prove that he can stay healthy. He has missed 21 games in the last 3 years. Now, he only missed four last year, but wait a second. He only missed four. He missed four. And he missed all but two the previous year. And he missed three the previous year. So he's got to prove that that he can stay healthy. And I would also point out that he was relatively ineffective last year. Not all his fault. The Giants were relatively ineffective as a group. But their offensive line is not a mess. So there's a, I think a lot, both guys have a lot to prove. Yeah, Daniel Jones isn't that good. I think the jury is out, or in. Actually, the jury is in. The jury out, meaning, never mind. You understand what I mean.
Yes.
I think the jury is in on Daniel Jones and that he's just a guy. You know, in many respects, kind of like Sam, kind of like Baker. Just a guy. But the Giants are still going to let him play. What is interesting, though, and by the way, there was no love for Antonio Williams, former Tar Heel, last night. 61 yards rushing, a touchdown, 9 carries. But from the he's still in the league category, Tyrod Taylor played.
Yes.
That guy is like, I mean, he's like the sock that keeps showing up in your dryer. Like, wait a second, I thought I took that out.
Right.
Nope, it's still there.
No match, but that one's there.
Holy cow. This is his sixth team. Which, frankly, I thought was a low number. Because I would have, if you had asked me yesterday, I would have said, this has to be his 10th team. But this is his 6th team. And I challenge anybody to name, in order, the other 5 before the Giants. Here's what's interesting, is that he keeps getting jobs, and then they replace him with rookie quarterbacks. Maybe it goes the other way, although Daniel Jones is not a rookie, obviously. But maybe he'll replace Daniel Jones for a change. Meanwhile, to the Patriots, they didn't play their starters. Judge and Matt Patricia shared play calling duties. I think that's noticeable because Patricia was the defensive coordinator for the Patriots before he left to be a failed Detroit Lions head coach. And now he is an offensive assistant helping to call plays. That is Bill Belichick being galaxy brain. Jeremy Fowler from ESPN was asked if the Patriots are broken.
Short term, there are going to be some growing pains because they're trying to streamline the offense. They're segueing from Josh McDaniels and his heavy influence on the language of the play calls and all that stuff to an entirely new process. There are different iterations of this Bill Belichick system over like 2 decades. So short term, going to be a bit of an issue. Long term, they think it's going to actually be an easier offense to work with. But the thing is, when you talk to people league-wide, they're kind of like, good luck, Mac Jones. Like, this is maybe not the best for a second-year quarterback.
They don't have great offensive personnel. They haven't had great offensive personnel since Tom Brady's last year. This is what we talked about yesterday. I'm sorry, I didn't realize that Josh McDaniels' offense was like learning Chinese. I didn't know that. I mean, I'm not saying it's easy. No NFL offense is easy, but my gosh, it's everybody's going to have to learn a new language this year. I mean, come on. Let's stop. All right, tonight. Actually, not tonight. We're still on last night. I have one more thing about last night. I apologize. It was an AFC Championship game preview last night.
Yes.
Ravens hosted the Titans. Of course, we have to assume that both starting quarterbacks will be hurt when we get there. No Lamar Jackson, no Ryan Tannehill, but there was Malik Willis, who did a lot of athletic things that people are excited about. He was scooped up by the Titans on day 2. He can be an exciting player. Ravens won, I'm told, because they scored more points, but nobody really cares except diehard fans and the bettors. Now to tonight, where the Browns and Jaguars and the quarterbacks will take center stage. It's year 2 for Trevor Lawrence, and it has to be better than year one. And Mike DiRocco of ESPN, who covers the Jaguars, on the difference last year to this year on Trevor Lawrence.
He's had a really, really good camp. He's only thrown one interception, and that came on a ball that Evan Engram should have caught in the end zone. It kind of went right through his arms. He's been much more confident and much more in control of the offense than he was last year, which is sort of expected because, you know, he was a rookie coming in trying to figure out how to play in the league and learn a new offense. But, you know, with Doug Peterson's offense here, he seems to really fit it pretty well. And he's been, I mean, he's throwing the ball as good as I've ever seen him. And that's what he said earlier in camp, too, that he feels like he's throwing the ball the best he did.
Here's how you know it's going to be a better year for Trevor Lawrence. Urban Meyer is gone.
Yes.
That's all you really needed to know. Bigger story. Deshaun Watson is going to start the game for Cleveland, in spite of the fact that he will miss at least the first six games of the season. We will see Watson when the game starts. Last night there was an AP story citing sources close to Watson saying that the Watson camp would agree to an eight-game suspension and a $5 million fine, which I responded on Twitter with, of course he would agree to that. But you know who wouldn't agree to that? The NFL wouldn't be happy about that. And the reason that they would agree to this, why the Watson camp would agree to it, is because they know it's going to be more. Of course you'll agree to that. They would have signed on for that at the beginning. Remember that before it went to an arbitrator, the NFL and Watson were trying to negotiate the terms of a suspension, and the NFL never went lower than 12 games, and I believe the fine was $8 million. That's what they were willing to, as low as they were willing to go. And we talked about this yesterday. Earlier in the week, Roger Goodell, the commissioner, openly stated that he wanted a full year. He has openly stated, he said, everything Watson did, and he went into some detail, not about what he did, but in how he felt that it looked, he wanted a full year. So that, to me, and we talked about this yesterday with Daniel Wallach, a sports attorney, opens the possibility for a lawsuit filed by the Players Association if Goodell spoke it into existence. And here's Daniel Wallach on whether or not the Watson camp can sue and what the NFL can do in advance.
I think for Watson, the decision as to whether to sue hinges on how serious the suspension is, because the crux of his argument in federal court is going to be that the league wants to impose a suspension for nonviolent conduct.
Right.
As severely as suspensions for violent conduct, and that historically arbitral precedent, which is, you know, the past case law where the league imposes discipline for both violent and nonviolent offenses under the personal conduct policy, the most the league had ever suspended a player for nonviolent conduct is three games. Mm-hmm. So if you have four accusers here, four credible victims, you can make a case for the league to impose a 12-game suspension.
So the in the conversation with Daniel Wallach, which you can find on the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, he was the guest that joined us yesterday. The reason why 12 would probably stop any legal action is because it's justifiable. And you can't say that Roger Goodell, you know, put his thumb on the scales, even if he did, if the suspension is not what Roger Goodell publicly stated he wanted, which was not only a full year, but what he wanted really was full year with having to apply for reinstatement. So it really would be an indefinite suspension of at least 1 year. So treating him like a multiple-time drug offender is what the commissioner wanted, because he wants, you know, Watson to essentially beg for his job back. Like, I'm not in any way, I'm not going to absolve what Deshaun Watson did. If you want to say allegedly did, that's fine. The behavior is egregious, and this is the way I've termed it. Like, I believe even if Deshaun Watson didn't force himself, he clearly put himself in position that, let's see what happens, and didn't care how it looked. And that's offensive, too. So I just call him a serial creep. And if, you know, that's the way it gets down, that's fine. That's the way it gets down. But it's going to cost him, I think, 12 games. And that's where the NFL is probably going to be. They might not like it, but I think the NFL will at least avoid legal action as a result of that. All right, Tom Brady. I saw the story yesterday, and I hadn't read it, so I didn't want to bring it up without reading it. He's stepping away from the Bucs right now in training camp to deal with a personal matter that was not disclosed. They asked him if it was health-related, family-related. They asked Todd Bowles all these things yesterday, and he goes, it's a personal matter. I'm not going into it. But Bowles said that he was never going to play in the first two preseason games, and he came to training camp probably a little early to work on some chemistry with new receivers, because there are a bunch of new receivers, including Julio Jones and a new tight end in Tampa, no Gronk. So this was all planned out ahead of time. Rick Stroud, who covers the Bucs for the Tampa Bay Times, was asked if there is any concern around Brady.
No. And I think the players have some, because I don't think they're all that clued in. I think there's some people in the organization, certainly Todd Bowles, Jason Light, primarily those two, they run the football organization. They don't have any concerns, and some of the people in the front office are like, yeah, no, it's not really a, you know, there's not this atmosphere of dread, you know, at all. Now, you know, maybe that's wishful thinking. I don't really know, but I think they have a pretty good belief that, and frankly, a willingness to say, look, as long as he's there September 11th, we don't care. You know, it's kind of like, we get Tom Brady.
I don't disagree with any of that. And if there was an inkling that he might not play, I'm not sure that he would have been in training camp to start. So, but no Brady, so bet against the Buccaneers till your heart's content, to your heart's content, in these August friendlies. All right, to one more thing before we wrap up here. Hurricanes will host this year's Prospect Showcase. Every year, the Canes send their players, their best prospects, to what amounts to a rookie tournament. And a lot of times it includes these same four teams. The Hurricanes, the Lightning, the Panthers, and the Predators will all get together here in Raleigh September 16th through the 19th. It's a Friday through a Monday. And each team will have a whole bunch of really young players. Some are real prospects. Some are just young players. Some have played in the NHL before. And I will point out that this is where Seth Jarvis jumped off the ice last year. So Jarvis went to this preseason rookie showcase last year, which I believe was held in Tampa, and he was unquestionably the best player there. And at that point, eyes were opened for the Hurricanes, who said, okay, this guy just might make the team now, and they kept him around, and the rest is a 40-point season in 68 games, and that went with, well, I don't know, like 16 or so, however many games it was, with nothing. Like, he had a couple of points, but there were no goals for a while. And then Seth Jarvis, you know, resumed being one of their better players. The kid's got a dynamite future. So will somebody like that emerge? Don't know. But those four teams will have their prospects here in Raleigh on from September 16th through the 19th. The following week will be the start of Hurricanes training camp. And, yeah, the other, what, 2 days ago, I asked Don Waddell if I was right in thinking that if I could read the tea leaves, that Jake Gardner will, in fact, be part of the mix on defense.
No, yeah, you're 100% right. We've made decisions on this as recently as the last 24 hours. Jake's been skating in Minnesota for the last few months. He's actually skating with some of our guys, Stephon and Brady Shea and that, and feels great. We watched video of him, and we had it all videoed one day. So our plan is to bring him into training camp. You know, we're, as you look at our D right now, we have two left shot guys and five right shot defensemen, which is unusual. Yeah. Usually the other way around. So you know, Jake being a left shot defenseman, you know, his last year he played, you know, it became noticeably that the skating was becoming an issue. You know, he hasn't lost his smarts. You know, he's always a smart player, but he just couldn't move around with his hips the way they are, and having both hips done now, you know, it's going to give him another opportunity, and we're looking forward to seeing him in training camp.
Okay. Well, we'll watch him in training camp. The Max Pacioretty injury, my opinion here, and I respect Dom Waddell, gives the Hurricanes probably 4 or so months to figure out what their third pair is going to look like. For now, it can include Jake Gardner, but talk to me when we get after the trade deadline and what the Hurricanes' third pair on defense looks like. I would wager it won't be Jake Gardner and Ethan Bear. That's what I will wager, that it will not be those two guys. Right now, that's probably who it would be. We'll talk to Luke Tkach about this a few minutes later on. And finally, regrets. So Antonio Brown, yes, and what I could only guess is a retirement note on social media, talked about his one regret, and it is incredible. And I'm basically going to read as much of it as I can. Biggest regret doesn't involve calling my GM a cracker or showing up late to Raiders training camp in a hot air balloon with frozen feet. Think about that for a second. Or throwing rocks at that UPS driver. Okay. My biggest regret is that I'll never get to see me, Antonio Brown, play a game live.
Wow.
Sure, I can rewatch the game afterwards, but I can't imagine what it was like for you all to see something like that. Like watching the Beatles or Jesus perform at Red Rocks.
He went there.
I've never seen Jesus perform at Red Rocks. I'm sure that was fabulous.
Yes.
And the Beatles also never performed at Red Rocks. Probably less spectacular than watching Jesus perform at Red Rocks. That is Antonio Brown staying on brand. When we come back, Tim Brando, Fox Sports, on a summer to remember or forget about college football. Next. Tim Brando from Fox Sports, one of the best, joins us on the Adam Gold Show. So, how would you... How are you, Mr. Brando?
How are you, buddy?
I hope I didn't get you off the first tee, or the fourth tee,
no.
or whatever it is.
No, I decided to shelve my round today. I'm going to play tomorrow.
Okay.
I shelved because I saw a little rain cloud, and it did rain. And I looked at my wife. It was about 6:30 in the morning, and I said, honey, I think I'll go make the coffee and stay home. What do you think?
That's a great idea.
She smiled. I won some favor. And when I get done with you, I'm going to do a little mowing of the lawn at the chateau. So I'll get my workout that way instead of walking the course.
That is a beautiful thing. All right, so tell me this, Mr. Brando. How would you term this summer in college football?
I'm going to use a Democratic Party line, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When everyone's talking about inflation, and I'm going to use a political line, okay?
Sure.
We're in a transition period.
Yeah.
How about that? Can you handle that one, Adam?
I can.
We're in a transition period. I still think it's great. You've known me for a long time.
Yeah.
And you know about my moaning and whining and gnashing of teeth, okay, about all the ills of college football, all the things that we needed to do to fix the bleeding that was taking place with the way the sport was governed. I believe that this has been a great year towards flipping it and going in a progressive manner the right way to heal what's been wrong, this open wound that we've had with college football's postseason and with the way college football is viewed, is valued, and is covered. I think that there is a lot of good out there during a time in which most of the people in the media are telling you what's wrong and everything's bad, nothing but doom and gloom. And I don't see it that way. I just don't.
I've always been,
as you know, I've always been passionate, and I've always been willing to say what was wrong. And a lot of times I was maybe 10, 20 years ahead of the curve a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what we're seeing now take place is an example of some of the things that I've been talking about for 20, 30 years.
All right, okay, so let me ask this. Let me ask this, Tim Brando. How, because I'm not necessarily disagreeing. I'm just curious. How is Southern Cal and UCLA leaving the Pac-12 for the Big Ten? How is that good for Stanford, Washington, Oregon, unless they also leave?
It means that they're going to have to do something instead of allowing USC and UCLA to carry their water all the time. You know, the Pac-12 has been lazy and has leaned on the LA schools, particularly USC in football and UCLA in basketball. I'll throw basketball into the mix, even though it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter, right?
Those schools have carried the freight, and they're frankly saying, man, you guys need to get your ass in gear. Start spending and investing some of your revenue back into your football program. Have you spent any time at Cal and Berkeley? I have. It's an eyesore.
Yeah.
Have you gone to Stanford for a home game? I have. I had them against Notre Dame at the end of the 2019 season. Hell, there were more Notre Dame fans than there were Stanford fans at the farm. Okay? It's bad. It's historically bad. Washington, get your act together. What the hell are you thinking? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon has held its own. And listen, we're not done. I'm not sure that the realignment is completely done. And certainly in the Big Ten statement, they indicated that when they were at least not announcing the new deal, but at least admitting to the new TV deal. They said, you know, we don't have everything complete just yet. So who's to say that Cal and Stanford won't join
right.
in the Big Ten, or that Oregon or Washington, who in my opinion would be the two more valuable TV mm-hmm. teams to bring in, might join. But what it does do, Adam, to specifically answer your question, what does USC and UCLA do for college football? They do a hell of a lot more, to be honest with you, for college football's emergence nationally by being in the Big Ten than Oklahoma and Texas going to the SEC might. It means we've got games of national significance, more games of national significance, better games to watch on TV all day long,
yeah.
all night long, and on every network that is over the air in our country. Not only did Fox say, you know what, ESPN, you don't control all of college mm-hmm. football. We have a portfolio that we believe can compete. But Fox also got CBS to stay in college football. Many people thought they were done, that after losing the SEC, that they would not even be in the college football business. And they've got NBC coming in with more than Notre Dame to do a primetime game yep. every week. Now, that means for the consumer, you've got a lot more options to watch big-time college football.
Yep.
And these matchups now with USC and UCLA coming into the league, there'll be more interest in those games, similar to what Notre Dame coming to Wake Forest or NC State might mean to ACC fans. I mean, that deal, you know, you can – there's a lot I can criticize about John Swofford's last television deal. And you know how Swoff and I – we're friends.
Yep.
He didn't always like some of the things I said, but we're friends. But that deal he made with Swarbrick, which made sure that Notre Dame played five ACC teams and that they rolled them through every ACC stadium at some point, was huge for those schools. It mattered. Well, USC, UCLA will do the same thing in places like Bloomington, you know, in West Lafayette, in places in the Big Ten historically that have not been considered top tier. It's going to help those schools. And it certainly gives you even bigger games for Michigan and Ohio State to play besides the one at the end of the year. So there's a lot of good that comes from the expansion out west into the Big Ten. We need to make the game more national, not regional. You know, people have said, well, you know, the regional rivalries. So what? It only matters in your corner of the country. We need games that have bigger impact nationally so that we'll have people talking about more games than just the games involving Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson, and the other teams that we know are likely to be in the college football playoff every year.
Tim Brando is joining us here. We only have a few more minutes left so that you can go spend the rest of the afternoon with Mrs. Brando. But you mentioned you mentioned Clemson. That's a school that Paul Feinbaum puts in the SEC basically 3 days a week, and that's fine. It may happen down the road, but grant of rights will be a pretty big hurdle to overcome. It may take 10 years. Maybe Clemson will ultimately get to where Paul Feinbaum wants them, and maybe they won't even resemble Clemson today when we get there, because Clemson today doesn't even resemble Clemson 10 years ago. But I saw your top 10 that you put out on Twitter the other day, and you had NC State firmly in there. So sell me, sell the triangle, and the entire state of North Carolina, by the way, Tim. We're statewide for some reason. sell us on the Wolfpack.
All due respect to my friend Paul, who, by the way, I've been banned from his show. Apparently, the suits in either Birmingham or Bristol, they don't want Brando on the SEC network any longer.
What a loss.
Paul and I are friends, as you know, but he is the ultimate front runner.
Yes.
Okay? Paul has always been the ultimate front runner. If you're not big, you're not worth his time. And North Carolina State is a team that, frankly, most people, including Paul, unless they're reminded, wouldn't know that Doran is the head coach and wouldn't know one damn player on the team. Okay. That's the issue. And by the way, I'm having fun at Paul's expense, but the truth is that's the way it is, Adam, with all of the media now in college football.
Yeah.
And that's been the problem. And another reason why everything that's going on with college football is going to force us to pay attention to more of the sport globally, not just, you know, those brand names that are out there. Okay. I'm sick and tired of hearing about Texas all the time. Okay. I'm sick and tired of it. And about the only thing we know for sure about Texas is that they're not back. And they keep telling us they're back. Okay? So we're going to – a team like North Carolina State is everything that I love about this game, because it proves all the front runners that are in the media wrong. Okay? They are returning outstanding talent at wide receiver. They have, I believe, a quarterback that can really get it done.
Mm-hmm.
They are a club that, if you think about it, have been built from a 3-9 first year, okay, and now have gotten to a point where after five winning seasons, they start to crack the top 25, and here they are in a position with a coaching staff that's been intact for a while, a defense that has really improved. That switch that they made, you know, to go to the 3-5 back in 2019 paid some dividends. And they've now seen talent really emerge, okay? And you know, Clemson, excuse me, but what in the world did we see at the end of last year, even though they did manage to win nine games, what did we see at the end of last year that suddenly makes us believe that their quarterback issue is not going to be still an issue when they play quality opponents?
Yeah, I'm not even sure it's the quarterback. I'm not even sure they have a good enough offensive line. They haven't had a great offensive line in 3 years.
Clemson has an outstanding offensive line. And I love the schedule for Clemson. I mean, for NC State. I love the fact that you play at East Carolina Open. That'll get your attention. Then, you know, you play that non-conference game with a Texas Tech team. And they're, by the way, very athletic. But they're in the middle of a coaching change with Joey McGuire coming in. You're going to be 4-0 going into that game at Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
But people are going to be telling everybody, well, who did they play? I mean, who's the best team they played? You know, Texas Tech, and that kind of undervaluing is what takes place in the college game, which enables, I think, North Carolina State to go in and shock the world. I'm counting on that. I had that in mind when I put them in the 7-hole, and I think, you know, it's something really the ACC needs.
Yep, they do.
Desperately. The ACC needs a team like Clemson to challenge, and Doran has been you guys know this. He's been in the shadows of Mack Brown. He's been in the shadows of, I mean, everything that goes on in the Triangle area, as big as it is. North Carolina State football just, you know, Jeff Gradley can only do so much. You know what I mean? There's no doubt in my mind. There's no doubt in my mind that North Carolina State is a team that can finish in the top 10 at the end of the regular season. And so, along with Baylor, who I've got making it to the playoffs,
yes,
I don't think
do.
They're going to lose a game. Baylor is undervalued, too, because they're Baylor. They're not Oklahoma. They're mm-hmm. not Texas. North Carolina State is that team for me in the ACC.
All right, Tim Brando. Go back to Mrs. Brando. I hope the coffee was delicious, and I will talk to you very soon, sir.
You got it. And listen, I know everybody's raining on Jim Phillips. Jim Phillips should have voted yes for the playoff expansion. Mm-hmm. That was his big mistake. But he inherited a bad TV deal. That's not his fault. Let him do his job. Give him time to do his job. And I think the ACC can remain intact. I hope it does. As you know, I've got a lot yep. of history and tradition with it. So all the best. I'll talk to you later on.
You got it. Tim Brando. All right. I get tweets all throughout the week. We read one from Eric earlier that dealt with college conference expansion. We'll move on from that. I know I mentioned hockey earlier. We'll talk a little hockey with Luke Tkach. I had made an announcement on the most recent Canes Corner podcast that I will be hosting the Stormwatch and Aftermath pre and post for the Hurricanes this year. And not that I want to really spend any time talking about that now because we're not at that point yet. Bert points out on Twitter, can't wait to hear the Aftermath arguments. Okay, so I do have this reputation of not only responding to people on Twitter, but telling them when their Hurricanes opinions are trash. And that's fine. And they tell me that my Hurricanes opinions are also trash.
It's just what happens.
It is what happens. And I won't even say out loud that you have every right to be wrong.
Yes.
So, yeah, I am also looking forward to that. It should be fun. All right, next to Nick on Twitter, because before yesterday, through 110 games, the Baltimore Orioles were tied for the final wild card spot in the American League. Now, they lost to Boston last night, so they are now one half game behind Tampa. But if I told Orioles fans that in April, that when we get halfway through August, you are going to be firmly among six teams fighting for four playoff spots, or rather fighting for three wild card spots, you would have killed a person. And here's where we are. And I don't even think this Orioles team is that great, but they're playing well. And I love the Orioles and that, not culture, because they don't have one really, but I love their fans and I hope they can sneak into a playoff spot. I really do.
This is the Adam Gold Show.